Okay. How are y'all hanging in? Last session of the day. Super excited to see Angela Davis in the closing session. Some of you? Okay, good. So I'm going to present some findings from a regional sample, and I just want to acknowledge that my colleague Robert Coulter is here in the room with me. So I'm excited to have him joining me here. We have no relationships to disclose. And so the first thing I want to talk about is really, why do we want to study sexting at this point? We're seeing a pervasive use of smartphones among teens. We're seeing as technology is growing, there's this availability of new technology that's at the fingertips of young adults. They can share videos and photos very quickly with little hesitation or consideration of really the content of what they're sharing. And furthermore, there's also been an increase in media attention around instances of suicide following sexting. The narrative typically in the media follows boyfriend-girlfriend partner situation where there was sexting involved, and then when after a breakup, the image gets shared, and then the media is making linkages to potential situations of suicide. We're also seeing sexting being considered child pornography. There was a case in Florida recently where an 18-year-old boyfriend had a 16-year-old girlfriend. After the breakup, he shared some images, sexual images of her, more widely, and he actually was sentenced to 5 years of probation and had to register as a sex offender. So there are some serious implications around sexting that we're looking at. And what we really want to know as researchers is sexting just an extension of communication in the dating world now with more technology involved? Or is sexting really associated with more harmful behaviors? And so we really want to, as researchers, start to look at that. So this data it comes from a regional sample of the Metro West Adolescent Health Survey. This is a survey we do every 2 years. It's a 10-year initiative funded by a local health foundation. It's been funded since 2006. We're in our fourth wave of data collection actually right now, which is really exciting. We've got 25 communities involved, and it's really in its expansion of the YRBS. For those of you that aren't as familiar with the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, that's a number of questions related to health information, from sexual behavior to substance abuse, physical activity, nutrition. So it's a pretty large survey, and a lot of our questions are modeled or exactly the same as the YRBS. We're also able to add questions on emerging trends. So we started looking at sexting in 2010, and the real importance of this survey is to give the data back to the community so that it can inform local planning and educational efforts. But because the sample is so large, it is also able to contribute to some of the knowledge in adolescent health that we have. So this data is that I'm presenting is census data from 24 out of the 26 school districts that participated. It's a middle and upper middle income community, and it's census data for grades 9 through 12. We had a little over 23,000 participants and an 89% participation rate. It is done in the schools during school time, there are a lot of factors that factor into that high participation rate, which we're really excited about. A lot of commitment from the community. So how do we define sexting? Right now, I think it's important to acknowledge that there's no common definition of sexting in the literature. There are variations on time period, whether it includes text-only messages or only photos and videos, and whether they have to be nude, semi-nude, or sexually suggestive. Our definition is focused on sending, forwarding, or posting nude, sexually suggestive, or explicit photos or videos of someone you know. So that's kind of the important piece of our definition, and how that's different is that it's photos and video only, and it's with someone you know. And this is a 12-month measure over internet, cell phone, or electronic devices. So it's sending to someone you know. Yeah. Sending to someone you know, or having someone else send one of you. So there's two measures right here. There are two measures of sexting. It's as a sender or as a subject. And then we have one measure of physical dating violence, which is did a boyfriend, girlfriend date or someone you were going out with ever hit, slap, or physically hurt you on purpose? And this is similar to the YRBS question. The analysis was restricted to heterosexual youth who dated in the past 12 months, so that's a little over 16,000 youth who participated in our survey. The reason we restricted it to heterosexual youth for this preliminary data is really that we wanted to look at the behaviors of sexual minority youth separately because we know there are some differences and we're still looking into that. So we found that 1 in 7 youth were involved in sexting as senders or subjects. We did collapse that data into one measure of being involved in sexting because we saw so much overlap. So 1 in 7 youth were involved in sexting as senders or subjects in the past 12 months, and 1 in 13 youth were reported being victims of physical dating violence. Now, the prevalence of youth being involved in physical dating violence was similar. The reports were similar among males and females, and this is consistent with national data around reports of physical dating violence being similar among males and females, although we also know that females are more often to be injured in these types of situations. So our first question looked at the sociodemographic and behavioral correlates of sexting. And what we wanted to know, first we looked at gender, and we found that sexting involvement was similar by gender, although slightly higher by, among females. Other studies have found similar rates to this, and others have also found slight differences among males and females, and at this point it's really difficult to draw any conclusions about this similarity among males and females and what we found. In grade level, we found that the frequency of texting does increase as students get older. And this is at the same time that we're also seeing sexual activity increase, and we don't really know exactly what that means at this point. It's important to note that 96% of our sample all report having a cell phone or using a cell phone at some point in their lifetime. So this is it's a middle upper income sample. They have access to this type of technology. And when we looked at text messaging frequency, those who were more frequently text messaging were also more frequently involved in sexting. And so you can see these are comparisons among males and females, and 20% of females and about 19.5% of males who texted 50 or more times per day were also involved in sexting. We looked at sexual behavior as well, and youth who have had sexual intercourse in their lifetime are about 3 times as likely to report sexting involvement when compared with youth who've never had sex. And this relationship is very similar for males and females. So our next question looks at the association of sexting and physical dating violence, which is really the heart of our presentation. And the first thing that's important to note is that I'm going to look at bivariate associations first, and then we'll talk about multivariate associations. So youth who report sexting are over 3 times as likely to report physical dating violence than those who are not involved with sexting. So this is certainly an important finding. This relationship holds when we look at gender. The relationship between sexting and dating violence, when you look at males and females who are also involved in sexting, very similar rates. You can see that there. And finally, while those who have never had intercourse are less likely to be involved in sexting in the first place, if they are involved in sexting, they are more likely to also report dating violence. And this is really an important piece to note, that this sort of vulnerable population who may be younger, never had intercourse, are also involved in sexting. There may be some association here with unhealthy relationships that we're really concerned about. And of course, for those who have had intercourse, a similar association with dating violence, and the risk really is much greater for this population given the higher prevalence of sexting and dating violence. Okay. So multivariate analysis, when we controlled for gender, age, text messaging frequency, and lifetime intercourse, we found that students involved in sexting were more than twice as likely to report physical dating violence than those who were not involved in sexting. When we stratified by lifetime intercourse, yes, no, and gender, male, female, we found the relationship of sexting and physical dating violence was similar whether or not teens had intercourse. And finally, the relationship was strongest for younger females who have not had sex. Of course, there's some limitations. This is correlate data. It's not causal, and we don't know the context in which this sexting and dating violence is happening. So these are separate measures. We don't know whether this is happening in the same relationship or different relationships. We also don't know the sex of the partner that they're sexting with or the person who sent the image of them. So there are some limitations around that. Thanks. And we also don't know if sexting and dating violence whether it was in the same relationship or not. Okay. So, of course, some limitations. As I said, this is cross-sectional data. We can't establish any causal association. And it's unknown whether it occurs in the same relationship. Our definition of sexting is certainly limited. It's limited to sending, posting, or forwarding a sext or having a sext image of you sent. And with our 2012 data, we're actually going to add a couple additional measures around sexting. One of those is creating a message of yourself to send to others. So that will be an important piece to look at as well. And we also weren't able to examine issues of sexual coercion in this data, but in our 2012 data, we are going to be looking at that. So finally, I think the most important takeaway point for this is that we did find that sexting is significantly associated with physical dating violence among this sample of adolescents, and that we aren't sure exactly what that mechanism of this behavior is yet, but we want to definitely acknowledge that this is an issue and we want to be able to account for it in some of our prevention work as we move forward. So while sexting may be an extension of dating with technology among adolescents, it may also be an indicator of unhealthy or coercive relationships, and we think that's really an important finding. We need to start discussing these potential risks within the context of teen dating with parents, educators, and practitioners so that we can go ahead and make sure that we're supporting teens in making, you know, the best decisions for themselves within the context of healthy relationships. And I just want to finally acknowledge our funder, who's the Small Health Foundation just outside of Boston. It's the Metro West Health Foundation. And so we really want to thank them for allowing us to take this regional data more widely and share this information with you all. And I did leave some business cards in the back. If anybody wants to pick those up, I'm happy to discuss questions afterwards as well.
Can the presenters come to the podium so I can answer some questions? We have opportunities for some questions now, please. So,
I have a question for Aaron. Did you all look at any emotional factors related to the violence?
The dating violence?
Yes.
No, we didn't, but that is a 12-month measure we've added to the 2012 survey, so we'll be able to look at that this year.
Yes.
Dr. Kruger, I asked you about the floor, but I'll come to you later so I don't take up all of everybody's time. One thing that I guess your talk reminded me of is the thing you made about testing while driving, and the catch rate is it can wait. And I feel like that goes along really well with the time present. And I almost wonder if you can do similar research, you could add a question, you know, one question you think about, like, do you text while driving and see if there's a relationship there, might be related to this, you know, which is
Yeah, thank you. And I actually have a lot of thoughts about how texting is part of this immediate gratification culture that relates to a lot of different things. And I have another study that you might be interested in, too.
Yes.
That will have a lot of, you know, bang for the buck, and if people, especially funders, recognize the importance of having a future orientation by investing now, they can make improvements that will pay off, and especially so down the road. So I'm hoping that they have a future orientation as well.
What was the name of the program?
Yes.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Did you look at differences between American BDM and Native Americans by gender? Did you see the differences there?
Yeah, we did. I'm not sure I could recall, you know, pull all those specifics out. Is there a particular, you know, injury type that you were curious about? Or? No, in general, you know, a lot of those specific causes of injuries are more prevalent among males. Certainly. Well, we looked at other like intentional injuries, homicide and assault and suicide, and those are much more related, you know, towards the male population. But we did break that up.
I have a question. Did you compare the American Indian with any other ethnic group other than the white?
No, we didn't. Our main audience is the tribes that are members of our Indian Health Board, so we're really trying to provide them, you know, this data that they don't have ready access to if somebody hasn't analyzed it, and just give them a general comparison population. But yeah, it would be nice to look at other racial ethnic groups.
I have a question about that. I was curious about the falls, the death by falls.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately thought of my aunt, and when she was 96, and she fell, and she broke her hip, and that kind of led to one thing after another, and then she died. But I don't know if fall was listed as the cause of death. So what are we talking about here? Falling off the Grand Canyon?
Can I add additional to that? I mean, since falls tend to be a problem in elderly population, and the Native Americans were dying so much younger, I wondered if the difference was explained by that.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the conclusion that we're drawing is that, in general, the American Indian population isn't living as long to become frail and have higher risk of mortality if they do fall. And I'm not sure that I can speak very very well about how the underlying cause of death at ICD code actually gets filled in. I know there's variation. Maybe someone in the audience can.
I was going to ask, given the prevalence of motor vehicle accidents as a fraction of total accidental deaths, did you get a chance to look at whether or not alcohol or other substances were involved?
Yes. We also analyzed the data by alcohol induced or alcohol related and substance related. We used contributing cause of death fields. We actually have a kind of comprehensive mortality report that's very descriptive, like my presentation, but much more comprehensive with different causes of death and broken out by age and gender. And that's actually about to be posted on our website. So if you're interested in some more detail, you know, feel free to look that up. I have a card on the back table. I don't remember if it was a significantly different relationship off the top of my head, but we do see a high incidence of alcohol-related crashes, absolutely.
Were you going to try to answer the original question? Yes, ma'am.
Just for Dr. Butler, I was wondering if you looked at income inequality or if you have any thoughts on how it might interact with poverty.
Income inequality. But one thing that I really am interested in doing next is I had been looking at poverty versus not poverty. And I'm interested in trying to figure out at what point that might not be the cutoff. It might be that you have to get maybe two times the poverty level to start being protected. I did start looking at that for like sexual assault and rape, and it does seem that white girls start to be protected, start to be somewhat less likely to be sexually assaulted and raped when once their family income gets about 6 times the poverty threshold. But among African Americans, there are not really enough African Americans in those higher income levels to see if that would be the same for them. So that's part, that's sort of an inequality problem that screws up these racial comparisons. Oh, I'd be interested in hearing more about that later.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and so we have the two measures of sending an image to someone you know, and then sending or having someone else send a picture of you.
But I'm sending your own picture versus you sending.
Right. So that's one of the questions that we added in the 2012 data, is asking about whether you've created an image of yourself to send to someone else. So yeah, we're really looking forward to that data.
Well, question to follow up on: is texting synonymous, another word for dating or commitment to that individual? Because do you find that as this, those two are the same?
Texting.
Yes.
Oh, texting.
Yes. Is that?
So texting, sending a text message that's text only was not included in, that's not the question. The question is only photo or video.
Oh, only photo. Even that. Does that mean you only send your own video or photo because you are in intimate relationship with that person?
We don't know. From this data, we don't know whether what it means to send.
Yeah, that's why exactly.
Photo,
that's
yeah,
why. What does it mean?
That's an interesting question. Yeah.
Any other question? Yeah. Okay. Did you have a question? Yes, sir.
Can I ask you a question, Mr. Bowen? I'm sorry. Can you describe your reasoning for why you put sexual abuse and plus or minus physical abuse together in your analysis, and why you separated out into like 4 different groups?
Mm-hmm. So I've worked a lot with child abuse data, and I often have separated it into 4 groups. One thing is when you get into the sexual abuse only group, the numbers get small, but this was a very big study, so I didn't have to worry about that. But only a small percentage of people who report child sexual abuse have never been physically abused. So it's an unusual category, an incident of sexual abuse with nothing else. So in some ways, it doesn't really represent people with a history of sexual abuse. And so that's why I ended up combining, because that is more often how it happens. So most people with sexual abuse have physical abuse with or without. And it does tend to represent a more severe form in terms of the outcomes.
Any more questions? Can you join me in giving them a big hand of applause for that? Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.